You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
You are now listening to the Ride or Cry podcast.
Wow, that's terrible. So you're, I mean, obviously we'll talk about whatever you want in your podcast, but your model has completely changed now. I mean, it has been for a while. You adapted really quick.
Yeah. I think we adapted like week one. We were just like, all right, we're going to do online shows and we're going to start a Patreon and do all the stuff. So we're just trying to get used to this life, I guess. But how has it been for you interviewing people over like the internet? Because I feel like a lot of really interviewing people, and your show is about being in that studio, and it just creates such a vibe, and it's such a like in-person thing. That how has it been?
You understand it very well. It's been wretched. It's been hard. It's
wretched is a great word for it.
It's been very different. Every day is a new set of pain that I that adds on to the pain that I acquired the day before. It's agita. It's like I'm doing everything on twigs and very, very thin wire. And the energy isn't the same with people. Like, that's the biggest thing, right? But it's all a combination of different energies, right? So one, doing the thing over Zoom is bad for the personal connection that you're having with the person you're interviewing, because there's so many physical and there's a lot of energy that we as humans give off when we sit in front of one another. And there's a lot of signs and a lot of things that are telling that you can pick up when somebody is in front of you. And you don't get that the same way over Zoom. And two, because the technology is so fickle and we're running such a thick with numerous C's operation, it could literally fall apart at any second. And that agita brews crappy energy on my side. So it's like, does that make sense? Like, it's just on all sides of what makes what we do really special. It's being tested and like it's never have before. So we still churned out conversations with BTS and Cardi B and Miley Cyrus.
I've been seeing it. Because that's the thing is, like, from an outside perspective, it all looks great. And it's all, I mean, I feel like you could do an interview with Cardi B under any circumstances and it'll be fantastic, you know?
Because she can just go. But the truth is, I think Cardi came on our show hoping to expand on something that I wish in hindsight, like as I've been home in New Jersey, and when I'm in New Jersey, I see family and I talk to more friends from a CDC approved distance, of course, and they consume a lot more of the stuff that we create. And a lot of people were watching the Cardi B interview. And I think Cardi went into that conversation with us with a little bit of agenda to showcase her music a little bit more. And I don't think I read that as deeply as I would have in person. Like, she even pulled out, had one of her assistants get her phone, and she started playing like these audio recordings of herself on how she starts a verse. Because, by the way, there's a lot of heavy rumors that Cardi B has a ghostwriter. So there's things like in that Cardi conversation that I would have picked up on in the studio, that because of the combination of stress and lack of ability to read people right now via Zoom, I should have expanded on something that I didn't. But the other thing is, I'm starting to get used to the Zoom thing. So I'm sure by the time we're allowed to do things in person again, my luck will be that I just finally perfected how to do a great Zoom interview, and then nobody wants to Zoom ever again. Because think about it, the second there's some sort of treatment and we're allowed to speak to one another normally, why are we ever going to want to see each other over an effing screen? It makes no sense. Like, do you get what I'm saying? We're going to be hungry for the opposite.
I think yes and no. I think that this for me, because, you know, we have another company, Ride or Cry, which is a creative agency. And looking back on it, we spend so much time going to meetings. Like, if we have a meeting in Santa Monica and our office is on the east side, it takes us 3 hours of just travel, right? And so in those instances, I love Zoom. And I think incorporating that into the future, I am so incredibly excited about. But obviously for things like podcasts or obviously events and certain meetings where you need to see the people and you want to get in a room and be creative, I understand. But I think I'm realizing how many meetings could have been Zooms in my life and saved so much time.
Well, do you feel like your passion comes through the same way?
Absolutely not. But I think some meetings don't necessarily need passion. You just need to get shit done, you know?
Ooh, by the way, that's a reality I need to be reminded of, because I'm like this, I'm the opposite person. I'm like, I'll be passionate and talk about it. And then, you know, we'll get it done. We will get it done. But like, I need a little more of that get it done mentality injected into my zone. I'm a passion based person, probably slightly to a fault.
I get that. I think I lean toward the let's get shit done a lot more. And so I think
balance it out with the other two, like TJ and
Morgan is the literal opposite. So, and then TJ is like in between. So that's why we're a perfect trio. Because Morgan, if he could make everything a meeting, he would. He loves like being around people and just shooting the shit. And then I'm there. I'm like, okay, what are we here to talk about? What's the agenda? Like, how do we move forward? And then TJ is like a total middle ground of that. So yeah.
Did we start the podcast? We could have started the podcast by now. We could have not. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, I think so though. But I wanted to actually touch on what you said, where you wish that in your interview with Cardi B, you would have elaborated on something. Mm-hmm. Have you ever found that in the past with an in-person interview, or are you kind of finding that now that it's with Zoom and it's like everything we just talked about?
There's no in between. I either watch the interviews back that I've done and I'm like, wow, that was the right question asked. That was the perfect follow up. That was good. Or it's like, you fucked up here. You messed up here. You should have expanded here. Why didn't you do that? Why didn't you pick up? Where was your mind at in this moment that you didn't see what was obviously right in front of you? And every conversation is different. And the truth is, there's like a constant balance and almost like when I talk to somebody, I want to be 100% present and 100% there. But at the same time, I know that certain things that may be interesting to me may not be entertaining to everybody. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, I don't know. I tend to have a decent gauge on what I am curious about and what I find interesting. Ends up being what people enjoy, but sometimes it isn't. And well, sometimes it gets the best of me, right? Where in the moment I think, oh, maybe that's not something worth expanding on, or maybe I should move on and I don't need to touch upon that. I should go here instead because people would like this more. And then there's moments where I'll watch back and I'll be like, oh, I should have done the opposite. I should have gone with my gut and I should have gone with what I felt. And the other thing too is, you know, I work with somebody every day that is very opposite of me. I love talking about music and I love talking about people's stories and how they came to be and what makes them tick and really who they are, both past, present, and future. And I work with Dan Zolot, who is quite a balance. He's a little bit more crass. He lacks a little empathy, but he drives with his own curiosity, which is very unique, very drama driven, very virality driven. We make a really good duo overall. So there's moments in studio many times where I do interviews and I go back and I watch and I'm like, I screwed this up. I should have done this here. And then there's other times where like, oh, this was outstanding. But there's no in between. There's no in between.
Really?
No.
Well, that's interesting.
There's no in between for me. And by the way, if there is an in between, I just don't watch the interview because I left the interview knowing that it was just a meh conversation that could have been more. And chances are this within 15 minutes of the conversation being done, I know where I screwed up to not make it what it could have been. And that could have been a host of different things. It could have been, I didn't prep well enough. I wasn't in the moment. I wasn't in a positive mindset. I wasn't looking to have fun. And I chose to go more serious when somebody wanted to be more about funny. Like Louis Capaldi is a great example of that. I love Louis Capaldi so deeply, but he is such a funny person and he wants to be funny. I think he masks his sadness by this over jolliness. And maybe he'd be pissed at me for saying that, but I would love to have him on the show to talk about it because I should have brought that up a little bit more in our conversation. But, you know, sorry, I'm rambling. Nobody asks me questions. I don't come on anybody's podcast, Babs.
I love this.
People do ask me. I don't respond. I get very nervous coming on other people's things because, you know, I
love
I don't
know. You're so used to like leading the show that, yes. Which I'm finding really fascinating right now.
I can talk for hours. So just shut me up. I have no problem stepping on other people. Step on me.
I mean, okay. So I will say, I mean, you know this, I've said this now multiple times that I've been such a huge fan of yours because of what you just said. I feel like you elaborate on things that I've never seen an interviewer do that in my life. I think you watch interviews with artists and it's very much like, how did this song come about? Like what inspires you? And it's just very basic, like cookie cutter questions, and you elaborate and you find ways to ask questions that really bring out who people are. And I've honestly watched hour long interviews that you've done of people that I would never in my life have any interest in, you know, like straight up, I've written them off for one reason or another. And I watch, sorry, my cat is playing with crystals.
Yeah, that's the most LA thing I've heard in a long time being in New Jersey.
Yeah, he loves playing with crystals, so that's
by the way, is one of those interviews that you watch JoJo Siwa?
No.
you won't give her time?
No, I don't think I've come across that one. One of them was Tana.
Oh, Tana Mojo.
Yeah, because genuinely, I didn't know anything about her except for the things that I've heard here and there. And none of them were, not that they were negative necessarily, but they weren't pieces of content where I thought, oh, I need to know more about this person. But I watched your interview with her and I was like, dude, everybody has a story. Everyone is the way they are because of their past and because of the way that they grew up and the things that they were taught. And you really bring out that human element in artists. And that's what I find so fascinating about what you do. It's like you've really mastered it. Do you think that that's something you've always been able to do? Like, have you always been able to bring this out in people, even in normal conversations, or have you just developed that throughout the years?
When I was really younger, I loved interacting with people. I loved connecting with people, no matter what it was, whether it was over something shallow or something deep. And when I got into high school, I went from being in a school with like 80 kids from preschool to eighth grade to being in a high school with like 2,800 kids. And I had no friends. I had nobody around to really talk to, whether to have a two-way conversation or for them to hear me.
Where did you go to high school?
I went to Wayne Valley. It was in New Jersey.
Okay.
And I had nobody. And it was right when the internet was starting to become something in terms of like people making YouTube videos and doing self-generated content. It was in like the first 4 or 5 years of it all. And I turned to radio as a way to make friends and to connect with people about things that mattered to me, or to connect with somebody on anything about their life and my life. So in high school, I turned to radio. And before that, I loved talking to people. I was very young having conversations. It took me a while to learn how to read. So instead of reading things, I rather converse with people. I've been, I have a strong sense of empathy that I feel very, very intensely, and it's almost overwhelming at times.
I do too. It's like a real downfall of my life.
Well, I think it's a downfall and also one of the greatest blessings, because when you can take on somebody's story, whether it's through reading it or hearing them speak about it, that can motivate you either to bring about change for them and for other people going through it, or it allows you to really connect and understand on a deeper level with what they do, how they got there, how they feel and why they feel this way. And my mom is the person who gave me a deep sense of empathy. She's been a social worker for like 37 years in one of the most impoverished cities in New Jersey. And, you know, she has an amazing story where she's helped a lot of people. I mean, hundreds, if not thousands of people over 37 years. And she takes on everybody's story. She hears everybody's story. Every day she sees clients, and they just, still today, they literally give it all to her. And she carries it with her. And that's what keeps her moving and motivates her. And that sense of empathy definitely exists in me. And I think it's what is required to connect with somebody, whether it's a Tana Mojo or a Trisha Paytas or you know, almighty Jay Bizzle, the kid who is famous for getting all the Justin Bieber tattoos in the exact same position as Justin Bieber. And, you know, hearing out this kid's story, which, by the way, is crazy. You know, everybody has a story. Everybody has a reason. And I think it did come natural, but what didn't come natural was how to form conversation and how to do it right, you know, which came over time. But a want to understand and get to know people and to really, really understand people. That was the natural gift that I'm very lucky to have. Genes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I totally have the exact same thing. I'm deeply empathetic. I find that, I mean, through quarantine, I've really unpacked it, and I'm trying to gauge situations where I don't need to be empathetic, because it kind of brings my soul down if I'm empathetic in the wrong situations. But it is totally
it weighs on you.
It weighs on you so much if you're empathetic in situations that where you need to just distance yourself and look at it from an outside point of view. It is, I mean, it's a burden, honestly. Like, it's really hard to live life being deeply empathetic, and I'm trying to figure out ways to kind of, you know, lean into it when I need to, and then back away when it just won't serve me.
And by the way, you'll get there. And I've gotten there to a certain, well, I just had a friendship that put me in a position to test that. And I was able to separate myself in a, maybe not that it was healthy for me, but the communication around the friendship separation, definitely not healthy, but you'll get there. Don't be ashamed of it, though, Babs.
I'm not at all.
Flex it when you need.
No, I'm absolutely not ashamed of it. I just, I mean, this is also a question for you, is like what side you lean on, because I feel like there are a lot of people who are like, fuck 2020. And then a lot of people, and I fall in this category, where I'm so thankful for this time. I'm thriving and I love it. And it's like the first time in my entire life that I've been able to slow down and really think about my life and think about who I am and what I like and what I want. And so just like empathy in general is something I've been thinking about. But what category do you fall into?
Jealous of those feelings. I'm definitely not in the latter. I'm definitely in the first. I think 2020 is good for a few different reasons. One, apparently spicy McNuggets are coming to McDonald's. That's a big
Yes.
Two, we got a Lady Gaga album that the world overlooked. Awesome. Three, a lot of injustices have come to the forefront of everybody's mind. And obviously, it's not the first time that innocent black men have been shot in our streets. But clearly, change is coming. And the coronavirus has put a rather large magnifying glass on what's going on within government and how this actually works, and the fact that there is massive disparity here between people who have the ability to profit off of what we're going through and those who can't even get the extra $600 a week that, by the way, not only do those people need, but our economy is desperately hungry for it. Like, they need anything and everything that they can get, both the people and our economy. I'm not seeing personal growth come from this time. I've been tested in many ways, and I think growth will only be acknowledged and not until we're out of it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, I'm so still in the thick of it. And sorry about that. I am so in the thick of it, and I correspond and talk to Americans every day over the radio show, and it weighs on everybody. This is the hardest thing that we've ever gone through as a nation and as a world, and it's hard. It's very hard. The world isn't normal yet. America isn't normal yet. I mean, people are afraid to go back to school. Teachers are putting their lives at risk. Students putting their lives at risk. It's just, it's insanity what we're going through.
No, absolutely. But I think that, and that's, you know, when I say I'm appreciative for this, I don't mean that I'm in my apartment alone all the time being like, party, I love it here. That's what I mean, is exactly that, is I'm able to focus on things that I would have been like, I don't have time to go to a protest right now, you know, like, yeah. I do. And I have been, and I have been learning about these injustices and trying to do something about it and educate myself and doing the same with like just me as a person and trying to figure out like all this shit that I genuinely just haven't had time to process ever, because I got my first job when I was 15, and I've had a job ever since, and I've had multiple jobs ever since, and I've just been on the go. And with Emo Night and Ride or Cry, we're just like getting on a plane, like waking up at 3 a.m. getting on another flight. Literally. Like getting into this meeting, like it's been nonstop. And even now I sometimes scroll through my Instagram feed or my page, and I'm like, I look at certain photos and I remember those moments, but I wasn't there. I wasn't fully there. I was just thinking about what was next and thinking about, like, you know, what's going to go wrong? Is the sound going to cut out? Is this person going to be late for their set? Whatever it is. And I've never been able to just be in the moment and appreciate life. And now I'm like grateful when I drink a glass of water, and I feel lucky that I have water, you know, there's like things like that.
And that is the biggest thing, is things that we took for granted before we'll never take for granted again.
Hopefully.
Maybe I'm probably speaking too soon.
Yeah. It's an optimistic way of looking at it.
But I hope so, because like I was saying before, this has touched everybody. There's not a single human being that this hasn't touched. And even people who are super wealthy, you know what they say? They rather not be profiting off the pandemic right now, because they'd be making more money if we the people went back to normal life. There's like everybody, no matter who you are, has been affected by this in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And it's a test. It's all a massive test, and it's so crazy.
It is.
My hope is that we all realize, and I feel like the people who are hanging out with you on this podcast are good fact science-based people who believe and understand that a mask matters and that social distance matters. But the truth is, not everybody does, and everything is a discussion, and everything is hard. Things that shouldn't be hard are hard.
Yeah, totally.
And that's because, truthfully, it's because we live in an amazing country that has given us so many rights and so many freedoms, that when it's time for us to wear a mask, we go, what are you talking about? I have to put a thin piece of fabric over my nose and mouth for maybe 2 hours a day as I go about doing chores. How dare you?
Yeah. It's just baffling that people don't understand that.
But we're being tested as people and as Americans and as a shared humanity. Everybody is.
Yeah. And we're actually talking to Youngblood tomorrow, and I'm really excited because he's been so politically active.
He is.
And I'm really excited to hear about, you know, like the importance of that as an artist to actually have a voice in this instead of staying quiet about it or, you know, deflecting it in a way.
And people say silence is complicity, and it is true. And culture, well, art should both reflect culture and at the same time dictate culture a little bit.
Yeah.
And I believe all artists, no matter your standing, you kind of have an obligation to say something, speak up, do something, stand for something. Because if you stand for nothing, well, if you don't stand for something, you stand for nothing. And it's hard for me to wrap my mind around artists who think it's okay to stand for nothing.
Yeah.
Like what is that? I think all people, no matter if you're a musical artist or somebody who works at the Quick Check or the Wawa, everybody should stand for something. And as an artist, I think you have a responsibility to both dictate and reflect culture in the pieces of art that you put out. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who disagree, like a lot of people. Nobody wants to be polarizing. People are afraid to talk about masks. Like, what the? People are crazy. You know, I almost lost numerous radio stations. So in addition to the interviews I do, we do like a traditional radio show that's on pop radio stations all across North America, like from Toronto to Houston to Juneau, Alaska, and beyond. And there was one radio station in Jackson, Michigan, who wanted to get rid of my show after immediately following everything that happened around George Floyd and the murder of George Floyd. I say something, I stand for something. We dedicated a healthy part of the show to it. Like we've done numerous times over the last 13 years that I've been doing the radio show. And the sad thing is, Babs, out of 13 years of broadcasting, you mainly remember the tragic moments that America faces. You don't really remember the great ones. You remember the Sandy Hooks and the Boston Marathon and the Paris bombing and the Manchester bombing. I mean, the Parkland shooting. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. You know, those are the moments that as somebody who's, I broadcast every day, no matter what, rain, sleet, snow, like the postmen get to you, radio will always get to you. And every day is a different bag of worms. And you talk about the shared reality. So you remember the crappy things, but you also, hopefully as a country, you grow from those things too. And as a people you grow, but sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. I lost track of what I was saying, but you know, again, I don't talk about these things ever. Well, I do. I talk about things that matter. I don't expand on the life, like Black Lives Matter, almost losing numerous radio stations, Jackson, Michigan, wanting to get rid of us because the program director literally calls us and he goes, "So I'm not a racist, but we don't stand for Black Lives Matter here." And I'm like, what are you talking about, man?
I feel like any sentence that begins with "I'm not a racist, but" is just...
Like, yeah. And by the way, the point I'm trying to make ultimately, and I lost my point in the middle, is if I stand for something and use my platform to do it, and if somebody who works at a grocery store stands for something, I believe an artist should stand for something too. And
absolutely. It's almost your responsibility as an artist to stand for something, I think.
And as a member of the democratic system, the same, like voting is standing for something, right? If you vote, you stand for something. You have ideals that you're going to back up and vote for to hopefully have your ideals and your vision and what you stand for be carried out by an elected official. We all have an obligation to stand for something, and artists and people with platform just have a megaphone, essentially, ranging in sizes attached to who they are as a being.
Yeah.
So when they stand for something, and when they speak about what they stand for, it should go through that megaphone.
I totally agree. I totally agree.
And some of the most respected artists in the world stand for something. Dude, Ariana Grande not only has registered tens of thousands of people to vote through headcount and what she was doing at her concerts, but She's reminding people of the primary. She sends food trucks out when voter suppression is rampant and the lines are 8 hours long. I mean, put money where your mouth is. She always does that. She's always there to support. She always walks the walk. And artists should do so, not only in the art that they put out there, but in the actions that they take. And Youngblood was out there with Halsey on the front lines. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw pictures of him on top of cop cars, yep. You know, really starting the chants and helping lead the march. It's right. It's proper. It's exactly what he should be doing.
It's really cool. And it's honestly, I've always really liked Youngblood. I mean, he played Emo Night before anyone knew him. He didn't even have a song out and he played full band upstairs and there were like, you know, 100 people up there. And so I've seen him grow from that and it's been so cool. And I've always really liked him, I think, because I don't know if you've seen him live, but his live shows are just fantastic, amazing, so much energy. But the way that he's handled the past few months, it makes me respect him on a completely different level. And that's how I'm starting to feel about artists and people in general, like my friends. I'm really just seeing who I respect even more than I ever have before.
Well, because you're tested as people when we go through all this type of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's everything from standing up Black Lives Matter, but not only standing up on Instagram, living a life where if you acknowledge and witness racism, whether it be in person or online, you step up, you say something. That's what it takes. Whether it's that or telling people to wear masks or physically wearing a mask yourself when you're out and about, we're being tested as human beings on so many different levels. And where people stand both morally, which I think, you know, Black Lives Matter is a moral argument. It's not a social, I mean, it is a social thing, but like you can't say all lives matter and have a strong set of morals. I just don't believe it. Like you're not a moral person. You're not a good person if you're so selfish that you can't even see beyond your selfishness. But yeah, we're being tested. Like we're just everybody, our true character is shining through right now. And like you just said, you get to see who of your friends, you know, genuinely believes in not just defunding the police, but fundamentally changing the way police work and interact with society. Or which one of your friends choose to wear a mask or not go to party, you know, not go to that massive house party like a dingus. You get to see the real people.
I'm actually having a party after this, so I don't know what you're talking about. It's all set up. You just can't see it. Yeah, I could talk about this all day, but I also wanted to touch on a few other things. I wanted to talk to you about when you first got started. And some like embarrassing moments or moments that you've learned from, because, you know, when I was in college and I pitched doing interviews with artists that came through our school to perform, my professor was like, it's not newsworthy. No one's going to give a shit. And so I interviewed the Growlers and like they were high and I was nervous and there was wind. It was just so embarrassing, the whole thing. But I learned so much from it. And it also became the most viewed article or video of the semester.
Hell yeah.
Even though my professor was like, don't do this. It's not newsworthy. I don't care. And I was just like, here we are. And it taught me so much, because in college you learn to like be so obedient and do what your professors do. And I feel like it may be the first time where you kind of think like, absolutely not. Like I'm paying so much money to be here. I want to explore what I know and what I want to do, you know? But yeah, I just want to hear about when you first started out, like some obstacles and some challenges or some embarrassing moments that you remember.
I mean, there were so many. So, I started doing the radio show from my bedroom and interviewing people from there. And that just gave, it just opened itself up naturally to just so many issues, both connectivity wise and technology. I mean, I literally did everything off nothing. And I mean, nobody was listening to me at first. So in order to make it seem like people are listening, I used to beg my parents to pretend to be listeners and call in. I love that. I remember one time in particular, I was interviewing Troy Sivan, and this was so long ago that he was playing young Wolverine in one of the X-Men movies. This was years previous to him releasing a song. Yeah, not many people know that he played young Wolverine in an X-Men movie.
I sure did not know that.
Well, I did, because those are the types of people at the time that I was able to get to come on my show. Like, the kid who was on screen for like 2 minutes, but it just happened to be, in this case, Troy Sivan. And I remember so vividly losing connection upstairs with him while he was in Australia and freaking out, running down to my laundry room where all the like the Wi-Fi internet hub was, and like using a dial-up phone to connect back into this radio broadcast thing that I was using at the time. It's called Blog Talk Radio, and it was really run through traditional phone lines. And yeah, I had to call back in, and dude, I had to call him again in Australia and kind of pick up from where I left off. It was just terrible.
Was that live?
Yes. Well, live, but nobody was really listening, you know?
Okay.
So it was more for, I guess, myself, but also for whoever would tune in afterwards. Holy shit. Sorry.
It's okay.
So, yeah, it was more for me. It wasn't for me. It was for me because I was doing it, but it was for everybody who would listen, but nobody was really listening at the time because, again, nobody knew Troy Sivan and nobody really knew my show. Very few people did, but I'm sure there was like maybe 5 people, 10 people listening live at the time. I mean, enough to be embarrassed in front of them, but who knew what that episode could have been afterwards if I would have gotten it right. But it screwed up so badly, I don't even think it's still on the internet. And some of them are still available. Some of them are out there still. I remember one of my first interviews, or my first interview ever, was with Debbie Ryan of Sweet Life on Deck.
Oh, love her.
Yeah, she's cool. Interviewed her. Who else back in the day? Like, a lot of random people, like, who were on, like, Hannah Montana and Nickelodeon.
And did you just, like, how did you reach out to them?
I just sent a bunch of pitches via email pretty consistently, begging people to come on. And I just wouldn't stop emailing people.
Did you personalize them?
Yeah. Each one was personalized. Okay. And I was... Each one was personalized. And I was able to get publicist contact information because I signed up for IMDb Pro.
Nice.
And by signing
up for
IMDb Pro... back in the day, I was able to get at least like a general PR contact. That was my way in. Just sending a lot of emails, Babs, and a lot of emails going unanswered. I mean, most of the emails I send, probably for every 10 or 15 I send, only one would get a response.
Honestly, that's a pretty good ratio.
Oh, thanks.
It didn't feel like that's not bad.
As I was churning out 10 or 15 pitches a day.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar with us, I guess. Yeah. Because, you know, we'll reach out to a bunch of people to come DJ Emo Night. I mean, I guess for the most part, we reach out to people that we think would want to do it anyway. But yeah, it's all a part of it where you just have to shoot your shot.
And I was in this phase of life where I'd interview anybody. Like, it didn't matter. I don't like, if you were willing to talk to me, no matter the event or like, I used to do phone interviews and in-person carpet stuff. And I mean, I've interviewed more people on red carpets for events that you would never even knew existed. Like the dumbest things, the tiniest step and repeats. I mean, and then I've done some big stuff too. You know, I did the Kids' Choice Awards many years in a row, in addition to 1 year doing it actually for Nickelodeon. And then I did the Tony Awards 1 year. And like, I did like artists that aren't even around, like who had no profile at the time, like their album release parties in basements in New Jersey somewhere. Like I didn't care if you would let me be there with my recorder. I would talk to you. And from each interview, I learned something. Really, I mean, I am a collection of every interview I've done, and there's thousands of them now.
Do you ever listen back to the beginning?
No. Sometimes I do go look to see if they're even still there. I get like I cringe just seeing it on a screen, and that's enough for me. Well, you know, it depends on what era of stuff that I'll go back and listen to. Like sometimes I listened to my conversation with Big Sean the other day, but that's from 4 years ago. Yeah. Probably stop around 4 or 5 years. I won't go back further than that.
Nice. I went bowling with Big Sean once. It was one of the most random things of all time. It was like also before I like worked in the music industry.
How did you get invited to go bowling with him?
After I graduated college, I moved back to LA and I threw my back out immediately and I was like in bed for 3 months, which I now know is just from stress. My body just like gave out.
Oh, no.
And the first week that I was recovered and I felt okay, my friend was like, let's go bowling with my friend who worked at Sony ATV, I think. And so we went to her house and we go and she's like, oh, like one of my artists is going to come. So it was literally Big Sean. And three of us, like it was like five of us. I have a photo of my friend Zach teaching him how to bowl because he didn't know how to bowl. Anytime I go bowling, I'm the absolute worst bowler, but it was amazing because Big Sean was
worse than you.
So much worse.
Congratulations.
But it's one of my favorite memories because it was so random and he's such a lovely human being.
He is an extraordinary man and
yeah.
Appreciation for him and he just announced the release of a new album. So I went back to listen to the interview to see if there's any clips that we could pull. And
nice.
I love him. He dated one of my friends and I got close to him while they were together. And, you know, a couple memories on edibles shared together and watching him be a real gentleman to all the women around and be a really good person. Yeah, I have so much respect for him. He's an extraordinary person. And I'm glad that you enjoyed bowling with him.
It was so fun.
And his lack of ability gave you a good little pick-me-up.
Yeah, and I think Kirsten Dunst was in the lane next to us. And
wow.
Because I went to school in San Francisco, I got so detached from this world that we live in where you just go to a coffee shop. And like I go to a Blue Bottle sometimes and Charlie Puth is there. I would say 9 out of 10 times that I go, you know, and it's just nothing for us. No, it's nothing for us because we both work in a field where it just doesn't matter anymore. I don't ever get starstruck. I don't ever view a celebrity or a musician as a higher person than my friends or my family. You know, everyone is the same and you kind of learn that through the years, but it's just such a funny city to live in where we just are so used to it. And so anyway, I was in San Francisco for 2 years and just having moved back, I was like, oh yeah, this is a thing.
But you also at the same time maintain a very strong respect for artists and you appreciate them. It's cool to see. You're not jaded by it.
Not jaded at all. It's just like I have the same respect for Mark Hoppus that I have for like my dad. You know what I mean? I'm not like Mark Hoppus is a god.
Hoppus probably could be your father.
Yeah.
Don't tell him that.
But he's one of those people that has been part of Emo Night since day one. And so he's like my friend now, which is so weird to say because the first time he DJed Emo Night, I was like, I like couldn't even talk to him. Like I couldn't even breathe. I was like, Mark, how are you here? What is this? And now it's just, he's just like a friend and it's cool. It's cool to kind of learn that and not feel that sort of pressure interacting with artists and to hold them in like high regard for reasons that aren't genuine. You know what I mean?
And the truth is they really don't want that. So
they do not want that. They're dying for just real conversations and for people to not fan out over them.
Or you can be like me and I don't text back anybody and nobody is immune. So, you know, none of my friends, whether it's my friends from, I mean, I have all my friends. My most famous friends have been my friends since high school, so I have no problem ghosting them when I get depressed or sad or, you know, yeah.
I love that.
It's really bad. I probably have so many unanswered text messages. I do.
But everyone understands it right now. I mean, if you're like that in general, I guess people will get used to it. But right now, no one can hold it against you if you're not responding to texts or...
And my good friends get worried and they check in on me or send me gifts.
That's cute.
Well, they send me... Yeah, I've gotten dinner a couple times, so that's nice.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But you learn a lot from Mark Hoppus and working... Oh, my God. I'm like, they know that this is happening. I don't know why everybody's calling me right now. I'm very sorry.
It's okay.
I was going to say it's very cool to be working with Mark Hoppus in the way that you do.
I don't ever lose sight of that. I've never thought that it was not the coolest thing. It's never not the coolest thing to have him just like be down to do a bunch of stuff with us.
And I wish his TV show lasted longer. I was a big fan.
Yeah,
I was,
true.
Yeah, I really liked it. It was good. I worked with a guy who would like be one of the panelists on it randomly. It was
nice.
Yeah, I loved it.
That's amazing.
Sorry, this is your podcast, and I'm interrupting with my team calling me 17,000 times. And by team, I mean Dan Zolot. Like, it's not.
What does he want, even?
Probably to get work done. Probably pissed at me or something.
True. I want to talk about Evo Night a little bit. I know we talked about it when we came on your show, but it was so, yeah, I was just like a super fan of you and Fish knew, I guess, like knew your contact or knew you a little bit and put us in contact.
Jersey Pride.
But I was so excited. I was like, this is the best. I watch your show 24/7 and I was such a fan. But
that is such a crazy thing to say, because the truth is all I could, the biggest takeaway from, there's a couple, but the biggest takeaway for me from that night was, why did she allow me to share the stage with some of the most iconic people in music, past, present, and Travis Barker is essentially helping craft the sound of pop punk for the future and for future generations. So who am I to even be in the same narrow backstage halls as these people, let alone on the stage DJing in between all of them? Like, what is, that's crazy. It was so insane to me that even happened and that you even wanted it to happen. And I do remember, well, I had so much fun, and now I understand. I started as a party DJ back in middle school. For 3 years, I did a party DJ company called Uber Tunes. This was long before Uber Kids, and I helped make the Uber brand something. Nobody knows of it until
I invented Uber.
I took it from the German people, and that little oolog thing on the top, we had one of those, and it was called Uber Tunes with a Z, and me and my friend would go and party DJ, and I would pick the playlist, and I would MC, and I would help us, I'd book the gigs, but my friend did all the technical side of it. And
why does Uber Tunes sound like a SoundCloud rapper?
I mean,
with a Z too.
If there's anybody out there thinking about getting into rap, you can use that name. I even have t-shirts already made. They're a little small, but you can try them out. But I started party DJing, and when I was up there playing songs that helped make me and connecting with this massive body of human beings, and we're connecting on these songs that are just so personal to in both of our lives, it brought me back to party DJing, because that's what it is. People just want to dance and have fun and escape. And it is such a judgment-free room. And it's so much fun. So much fucking fun.
Yeah. I mean, it was also, I want to say it was my favorite. I mean, that's a bold statement, but it was definitely my top 10 favorite emo nights, because it was an anniversary. And so I went into it with a mindset of like, I'm celebrating. It's been 5 years that we've been doing this and it's somehow still going and it's somehow still successful. So I was really like, I'm having fun tonight, everybody. Watch out. And so I just, and you being there was so cool because we just try to, we try to include everybody who just loves emo or pop punk or has some sort of a past with it. It doesn't necessarily have to be like the drummer of a pop punk band. You know, it, we wanted to branch out to people who were influenced by this music or love this music. And so that was really, it was really cool to have you there because, you know, you brought like a different element of the appreciation for it into it.
Most of them out there were like, who the hell is this guy? But I did throw out some weed money to people and I did, it was a lot of fun. I mean, first of all, I produced a photo that sits on my Tinder account to this day, which is a huge deal for me.
Oh my God, amazing.
Yes. And two.
So is it of you DJing or are you from like backstage?
Oh, me dancing at the DJ set.
Hell yeah.
It's a great Tinder photo. But also, I really felt more connected with the community that I live in, which is LA, after going, because there's something, there's a camaraderie in the air, this judgment-free community and friendship that forms with the people there. And yeah, I just grew closer to the community that I call home. So thank you for having me there and letting me be a part of it and even wanting that to be a thing. And I mean, there was such an amazing lineup. Travis Barker and I think 303 was there that night, right?
Phoebe Bridgers, who like before then I had casually listened to, but since then I'm obsessed. And it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, I wish I was more familiar with her work before so I'd appreciated it more. But
I mean, yeah, really quality people. And Tana Mojo was there, your girl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With Mott's son.
Machine Gun Kelly. Like it was just the most fun night ever.
It was.
And upstairs, Hawthorne Heights played with Travi McCoy. They played Nikki FM, which they haven't played together in like a decade.
How insane is that? That you guys have that sway to bring those people together.
I mean, all that shit takes so long to put together and people have no concept of what goes into it. But things like that take us a year or sometimes more to put together.
You gotta be, are you documenting it all?
Yeah, for sure. We have many a hard drive of footage.
Good, because that's gonna be worth something one day. The emo definitely story needs to be told.
Definitely. We're actually putting out a drunk history of emo night in a couple of days. It's very funny. Or like how it started. It's really funny.
That's great. So I mean, yeah. You guys have obviously formed and changed the way you do what you do. Are you looking forward to being able to throw parties traditionally again, or do you like throwing parties digitally?
Yeah, of course I'm looking forward to, just because it's all about, like you said, it's all about the people there and the fact that we let people come on stage and you're literally arm's length with people who also love these songs that you love and you're crying and you're hugging. And like, I obviously miss that immensely. So I can't wait, but it's also going to be so overwhelming to go from five, or I guess maybe a year of solitude to
the opposite,
to just like, sometimes it's very overwhelming on days where, you know, you're not feeling it. It's hard to be surrounded by so many people, which I mean, it's like what you said in the beginning of the interview, where sometimes you're not fully like in it because you're mentally maybe off. It's hard to execute what you're doing.
And I do believe that the sign of a real professional is being able to be consistent. So even if you're in a mood where you're off, you still manage a great product, right? It might not be superb, but it's good. It's better than your peers would have been, right? And I also think that that's the difference between... Something better be wrong.
We can wrap it up after this. No,
but I think that if you have the ability to still produce something good on your worst day, then this is what you're meant to do. If that makes sense, right? Like, that,
yeah.
If you have the ability to feel like you're not in it, but still put something out into the world that impacts people and touches people, and you know, at the end of the day, your peers aren't doing what you're doing, then I don't know. You're tested by that stuff.
Yeah, and when your heart is in it, you inevitably still come through on those days when you're not feeling it, and people can sense that, and it's always way better from an outside perspective than you personally feel about it.
100%. That's solely fueled by passion, right? Your heart being in it, you being able to pull through on your worst day. Passion, passion, passion. But consistency with passion is how you know that it's what you were meant to do. If you can wake up every day and feel just as passionate today as you did yesterday, then like, fuck yeah, you should consider yourself very lucky. I consider myself very lucky, you know, because every day I wake up with a new, it's the same passion, but it's refilled. You know, I go to sleep, I get rest, and a part of that, my passion bucket gets replenished. And
I love that passion bucket.
and I wake up freaking rip roaring and ready to go.
But you
just said something so interesting there, you know, in terms of like being able to push through, you know, and but even when you weren't there mentally, the party still had impact. The party still did something. People still had a great time. The brand still shined and everything got done.
Totally. Yeah.
You're doing the right thing.
Love that. I love this for us. I love the passion.
Yeah. Well, I need to be with somebody who is finding themselves in quarantine because I'm losing myself. Well, I'm losing myself and reminding myself of who I am because it's very, you know, it's like I said, it's wretched.
Yeah. That word is so on point. So on point. So, all right. I'm going to let you go so that Dan doesn't call you for the 95th time.
By the way, how I hope he listens to this. How rude of you, Daniel, to call me now 5 times. I was hitting ignore, but my assumption would be that you pick up the hint, right?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, I hope nothing's wrong. And if nothing's wrong, then just tell him that he's got to chill.
And here's the deal. No matter what it is, it's most likely not something that I haven't seen before. And even if I haven't seen it, the collection of experiences that I've gone through from shitty interview to great interview to shitty, like it doesn't matter. Like we've gone through so much that like whatever it is, we'll be fine at the end of the day. We'll figure it out and we'll overcome it. Like, come on.
Yes. Like nothing is the end of the world except for the end of the world.
Yes. Well yeah, meteors are coming and there is a giant pandemic. So those things we need everybody to overcome. But whatever he's calling me on is something that he's like,
I have developed the vaccine for coronavirus. I've been calling you to let you know.
Well, I would be so happy. I always say I want Dan to achieve great things because when he achieves great things, I achieve great things. He's like an extension of myself. So I want him to have the coronavirus vaccine. I want him to date a celebrity because it's almost like I'm dating a celebrity. Do you get what I'm saying? You know,
absolutely.
They're always going to be like, oh, that guy who came up with the coronavirus vaccine, he was on that show, that stupid show, the Zach Sang show, you know? So selfishly, I want Dan to do great things across the-
I'm always rooting for him and Sabrina.
Me too.
Like every interview I've seen, I feel like you guys have interviewed her quite a few times. I think I've watched all of them, but I just love their vibe. It's very cute.
And they're both from the same town in Pennsylvania. Her parents are into it. I know that you like. I think Machine Gun Kelly might be in that friend group with her in some fashion or whatever. I don't want to encroach on anybody's friendship or current relationships. But Dan ain't going anywhere, Sabrina Carpenter. And when you're ready, just come. But make sure you exhaust all other options before you knock on Dan's door. I think that's just healthier for everybody. Most of you. I love
that. That's so funny.
Babs,
all right.
Thanks for having me on your podcast. And I do my own interview show, but even that, like, you know, you don't talk much about my life all the time. And I appreciate you having me on. And it was very cool. I'm sorry to everybody else who could be listening to this, who asked me to be on their podcast. 2025, I'll do it.
I'm so happy you did it, honestly, because I think it's good for people to know your side and where you come from because you just interview other people for a living. So it's nice to see the other end of that, you know?
Well, I appreciate you very much.
Okay.
I gotta go. This
Bye.
Is insanity. Oh my God.
Bye.
Thanks for having me on your podcast, Babs. I wish my team would have allowed us to have a proper conversation without interrupting 1,000 times. You're amazing. And we'll do it again.
You're amazing. Yes.
Bye.
That's what ransomware is all about. It's psychological pressure.
Ransomware, when your computer's hacked into and your data held ransom. Attacks are on the rise, and Russian gangs are making billions of dollars.
The moment I got that message, I knew our greatest fears that we ever have are starting to come true.
The post-Cold War era is over.
.com, The Hacking. A new season from Crowd Network with me, Katie Puckrick. Just search for .com, that's D-O-T-C-O-M, and subscribe.